Hello, hello. This is Tiffany Carlson, and you are listening to No Free Rides. Today is November 28th, 2011, and the show is sponsored by Easy Stand. Easy Stand is the makers of some of the best standing frames in the world. Check them out at easystand.com. So everybody, I'm super excited to share with you an interview that I had on the radio show 104.1. Actually, it's the radio show on 104.1 Residence FM. It's called Technical Difficulties, and it's aired in London, and it's hosted by Tim Abbott, who has mild cerebral palsy. Not that it matters. He's really, really cool. So I was on his show about a week ago, so in a few minutes here, you'll get to hear that conversation. It was really great to be on his show. I was really very flattered, so stay tuned for that. But first, Thanksgiving, everybody. It just ended. I'm still full. I'm still totally burnt out on turkey. I'm ready for a big giant pizza, aren't you? I love Thanksgiving. It's seriously one of my most favorite holidays, mainly because it's one of those holidays that everybody can celebrate, you know, brings everybody together. It's not like Christmas where the Jews feel kind of like, I hate you, you know, everything's, you know, closed, you know. Everybody celebrates Thanksgiving, you know. And everyone loves to eat, so that's why it's a great holiday, you know? Get together with family and friends, doesn't matter, sit around a table, make whatever delicious food you like. You can make crab legs, not turkey. Have a good, great party, have some booze. The point is to eat a lot. And I love it. So I had a really great Thanksgiving, and I actually spent it with my mom and my stepfather and my sister and her boyfriend and my other sister and her boyfriend. My boyfriend had to work. He's a chef. He was busy working, so could not make it with me to my family event. So that's okay, though. You know, living this life is never going to be a ball of deliciousness with your man. You know what I'm saying? I know that made no sense, but whatever. So I actually, though, decided to do the cool thing, and I thought, who needs to do something on Thanksgiving and has nowhere to go? That's what you should do on Thanksgiving. Try to think outside of yourself and be less selfish, you know? So I would say, hey, my friend Melissa, I know, is going to be alone for Thanksgiving. So I gave her a little message on Facebook, and sure enough, she was alone. And see, she's alone because she's not from Minnesota. She's from Missouri, and she wasn't going to see her family for the holidays. Her boyfriend actually lives in England, in Wales, actually. So he is currently there and not here with us in Minnesota. So she was also alone and had nothing going on. So I brought her with me. Really good time. And, you know, and I felt good about it. And it was really interesting. And I got a funny story to tell you guys. She's vegan, which made my stepdad completely crack up because he's a hunter and would never be vegan. To him, that would be worse than going to jail. So he's like, well, why are you bringing a vegan to the house on Thanksgiving? And I'm like, get over it. She needs somewhere to go, and she's really nice. So brought Melissa over. She brought her own little tofu turkey that she had made in the oven, baked it with onions and carrots, and it was interesting. I'll say that. I'm personally not a vegan. I could never be a vegan. I love turkey. I love bacon. You know, you don't even get me started how much I like to eat flesh. So it was a great Thanksgiving, and everyone loved the food. No one ate the tofurkey except Melissa. And we got to talking about Thanksgiving and her man over in Wales, and who also actually has a disability, a very minor one. He probably wouldn't even refer to it as such, but it is a genetic disorder. And he was born with, I don't know the name of it, and I feel really stupid right now because I should have the name of it, being that this is a podcast. I looked it up, but I don't know the name of it, and I don't want to ask him right now. But basically, he's short. He's not like a dwarf short. He's about 5 foot tall. He has pretty long arms, but not longer legs. What else? He has a profound chest, right? And the chance of his children getting this disorder is also like 50%. And so, you know, he doesn't look like Johnny Depp, you know? And a lot of girls are kind of, into like looks, and they're really awful surface people. And he, you know, he's had a hard time meeting girls over there in the United Kingdom. And he, you know, I met him when he came over to Minnesota. He was like, you know, girls over there, he believes the girls over there are more superficial than the girls here in the United States are. And, you know, I'm not quite sure if that's true. See, her man actually lives in the Shire in this really cute little town called, I think, Hollybush, right? And so he grew up on basically a little farm and, you know, wasn't around a lot of people and had a hard time hence meeting cool people. And it's hard even when you're in a big city like New York City or Minneapolis or London to meet someone that's cool enough to look past your disability. So I think he actually just had a hard time probably meeting someone because he lived in a small town. Not because British girls are all bitches. I think that was kind of a gross generalization. But besides that, he ended up meeting Melissa on Facebook. So they're together, and he came over here, and they fell in love like a year ago. And, you know, and so it's really cute. My mom's like, well, that's really great. You're bringing him over here. He's coming here next Saturday again to visit her for another month. And he said, Melissa, I want you to make me Thanksgiving dinner. He's also vegan. You know, make it a vegan style. Get me so she went and got him a $40 vegan turkey, really fancy one, not the kind that she brought to my mom's house, the more expensive kind where they mold it to actually look like a turkey. Don't get me started on that. Anyways, I think it's stupid, but they're gonna have it. And my mom said, "Well, what do you mean he doesn't celebrate Thanksgiving in the UK? He's never celebrated Thanksgiving before." And I said, "Mom, think about what you just asked me before I have to explain to you why you're completely stupid." She's like, I don't get it. I don't know why you're saying what you're saying, Tiffany." I said, "Mother, Thanksgiving is based on the pilgrims coming to the New World and starving to death and finally making peace with the natives and having some kind of food and they are feasting, you know, Mom." Oh, yeah. Whatever, she was drunk. But still, come on. It's a stupid question. Anyways, it's amazed at how many people actually ask me that question when I tell them about this story. No, people in Britain do not celebrate Thanksgiving, but I bet you a lot probably would like to one day. It's really great. If you ever want to celebrate Thanksgiving with me and you live over there, let me know. If you're ever here, that is. So anyways, it was kind of funny. And she's coming over here to have Thanksgiving and to spend Christmas with her as well. Very romantic story. And they'll probably get married one day, you know. And I hope they do, because I would love to go to the UK one day and have an excuse. So when they do get married, I'm sure they're going to have a wedding over there for his family. So that'll be a good excuse to get my butt over there. And to actually see the homeland. Not really. I have a little bit of familial history that comes from that part of the world, Cunningham's surname. But yeah, it's very expensive. The pound, so it's worth so much more, you know, than the dollar. For now, I'll have to just be happy with surrounding myself with British accents over the phone. So without further ado, this is Technical Difficulties, and enjoy, guys.
Technical difficulties? No free rides? Resonance 104.4 FM. This is Technical Difficulties and No Free Rides with Tiffany Carlson in Minneapolis.
And Tim Abbott in London.
Yeah, so how are things with you then, Tiff? It was the audience on this show have heard your voice before. You were talking to Mimi about the nature of two disabled people dating each other, or wheelchair users specifically dating each other.
Oh, yeah. The Mimi, you're talking about the show I did with Mimi Emery, the Canadian.
Indeed, which is another added dimension to it, and that's a third country that we could...
You've had her on your show?
No, I was just thinking about the... Because obviously the biggest difference you and I have is this distance between us and the fact that the healthcare system in the US is not the same as it is in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
And it's equally not the same in Canada.
No, it's not. In regards to accessibility, you mean?
Well...
In
most senses, I think. I mean,
you know,
yeah.
Obviously. I've never been to the UK. I wish I could say I have. It's one of my dreams. I've been to Canada, though. In Canada, you know, I've been in, let's see, Winnipeg, I've been to Toronto, and they were pretty accessible. Minneapolis, very accessible, you know. I've heard London's kind of 50-50. Is that true?
Yeah, need some improvement. I think it's interesting. I think there are different schools of thought over. I think there are just the disabled community is wide, and there are different needs, and sometimes those bounce off each other.
Yeah,
like the need to cater for one group of people may well contradict the needs of another group.
Yeah, I know. That's always strange, you know. In the United States here, I've always found it to be strange how you have, like, the group of people that are disabled mobility-wise, and then you have, of course, the people that are deaf, and they have their very own exclusive group. And, you know, there's the famous Gaudette University here in the United States, which is this huge university, and everyone there is deaf, pretty much. You can go there if you're not deaf, but you have to be able to, you have to be, like, studying to be a sign language teacher, you know. Very fascinating, and that's a very, you know, community unto itself. And, you know, it's weird how I think disabilities kind of have their own little exclusive groups, and, you know, that happens in the United States. You see that a lot, and, you know, I'm probably guilty of it, having a spinal cord injury and tending to, like, only want to, like, blog about topics and do podcast topics that I'm more interested in. But, you know, I think that happens, just human nature.
I think maybe... The systems have worked themselves out reasonably well in the speciality disability media, mm-hmm. of which I'm clearly not part, mm-hmm. but you are, that actually they've managed to find specialists in different areas, but altogether it covers the whole spectrum. Whereas I'm here, actually, it is a bit different.
Tell me.
And I mean, well, the laws... are framed in a very generalistic sense. The definition of disability, which actually I think is pretty similar to what it is in the States, but society has followed the legal avenue a lot more and tends to define disability in that sense. I've spent quite a lot of my life fighting with people to get recognition that I'm disabled.
Are you kidding me?
No, not at all.
You have cerebral palsy, right?
Yeah.
And it's visible in that you use a cane and you have a hard time walking, correct?
Yeah, although the cane and the walking problems are reasonably recent. I have hand-eye coordination issues, mm-hmm. and I think I'm visibly disabled, but actually I've got quite a mild form of cerebral palsy, and so the most obvious bit is the way you get people's wrists bent back on themselves and things like that. That bit of it I've had all my life because the muscle tone happens that way.
Disability. It might not be super visible, but it's a disability, obviously.
Oh, yeah, but it's... I mean, this is an interesting... It's an interesting point to compare because...
Mm-hmm.
So, because like I said, here it does... It's very, we're very medical model driven, which is basically...
So you have to have, like, actual very... They want proof, so I'm guessing then mental disability is a bit more difficult to get, like, assistance.
Yeah, that really is. I've had lots of conversations with people where mental disability...
Mm-hmm.
Because of the visibility of it, like you say, and because it's actually... It tends to be a lot more fluctuating, I think.
Yeah.
Whereas you don't, put it bluntly, you're not going to wake up tomorrow and step out of your wheelchair and start walking along the street.
Yeah, I just got my handicap parking thing for my van renewed. And, you know, you have to get renewed every so many years. And I'm, like, when I fill out the form in the office, I can just do the 6+ years, and that it'll just like never expire. They make exceptions. I'm lucky since, yeah, I have a disability that's, you know, you say quadriplegic and people just instantly feel bad for you. The government, you know, here, luckily in the state that I live, Minnesota, they do help me out a lot. But, you know, I feel bad. I have a friend who struggles. Looking at her, you would never think she had any type of disability, but she actually has more problems getting to work than I do.
And you were saying that you were blogging recently on the subject that of people's perceptions of what it's like to be in a wheelchair, and the idea that you can sit in a wheelchair for a day and understand the concept of being paralyzed.
Oh, yeah, I did this blog a couple days ago, and everyone seemed to really, like, agree with me, which was awesome. And basically what I was writing about is, you know, you have these, like, nonprofits and universities over here in the States. I don't know if you do that over in the UK, but they have be in a wheelchair for a day events where people can sign up, maybe raise money from their family and friends, and then spend a day in a wheelchair and hopefully get some insight into what it's like to be disabled. And first of all, this is really cool they're even trying this, and I don't want to sound like a total negative ninny, because it is great that they do it, but really, what are they taking from it? I was saying not a lot. They should really do a month in a wheelchair. A month is kind of the standard, you know, minimum amount of time someone can really experience something and get a little glimpse into it, and I was comparing it to that TV show that's on FX called 30 Days, hosted and produced by
Morgan
Spurlock, who did, you know, Super Size Me, who also did the same 30-day concept, eating McDonald's and whatever, and so it works. And so I was complaining about that. Of course, no one would want to use a wheelchair for 30 days unless they were completely crazy or dedicated, like, super passionately, and, you know, I'm complaining. And the whole point is that it's really hard to really understand, you know, and people should really, you know, hopefully, you know, think about it. At least that's kind of just to get people thinking about really, you know, it's not just not being able to, you know, stand up for a 24-hour period. It's much more than that.
So, you know, for those of us, I mean, the weird thing about cerebral palsy is quite a lot of people, the weird thing for me as someone with mild cerebral palsy, mm-hmm. is that people automatically presume when I say cerebral palsy that I'm going to be in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
And I never have been. So, so just explain for those of us amongst the audience that aren't wheelchair users.
Yes.
What are the challenges that hit you in the face every day?
Well, you know, people, I'm a quadriplegic. And first of all, when people hear that I'm a quadriplegic, they assume I'm paralyzed from the neck down, which is not the case at all. When you break your neck, you can actually break it in several locations, and that can really determine what you can end up moving in your arms and your wrists. And so I was lucky because my neck broke kind of lower in the C6 bone, actually, it's the 6th vertebrae. So, you know, I can move my biceps and my wrist, which is a heck of a lot compared to a lot of people I've met in rehab. And I can drive and cook and do a lot of things once I'm up in my chair. But, of course, there are a lot of limitations. And, you know, I use a power wheelchair because I don't have the muscle strength in my arms to push all day. I'd be too tired, you know, and I don't have any finger movement. So I've gotten really good at manipulating my fingers. But, you know, really, I used to play the clarinet. I had to sell it. You know, it's depressing. There's a lot of things that I miss being able to do. I was hurt when I was 14 in a diving accident, and I'm 32 now, and I've now sat in a wheelchair longer than I've walked. And I think about that sometimes, and it makes me sad, but I try to always just remember that, you know, I was dead in the water when I broke my neck. I did drown. I was dead, and I need to kind of remember that. I'd rather be alive than worm food, and I know that sounds really morbid, but I don't know if I believe anything happens when I die, and so I kind of am still glad I'm here, even though I can't walk, and a lot of people have rudely told me at bars when they're drunk, I don't know if I could do what you do. I'd want to be dead.
Oh, yeah, I've been there.
Really? I go, really, you'd be dead? Well, you know, you got to be dead. Well, I don't think you would be if you were in my position and you woke up in the hospital like me, because there's still a lot to get out of life.
I'm tempted to say to someone who says that to me, well, do you want me to kill you then? I mean, the fact is, I was born cerebral palsy is caused by brain damage,
yes.
Neonatal or pretty close to. And so I always say to people, look, I've already pretty much died. in the process of being born. So it, I think it affects my way of looking at these things. It's interesting that you say about the psychology of becoming disabled, because obviously that's another difference.
It's so different.
I went all the way through with the same... I was going to say I went all the way through my life the same. I was always disabled, but as I was saying before, actually, I only became visibly so in the last 5 or so years.
That's huge, becoming visibly disabled. That'll turn your whole world upside down when that happens.
Yeah.
Because people treat you completely differently, and that's, you know, that's just how it is. I treat people with that disabilities differently, too. I'm guilty of it, too, even though we're all guilty of it, and, you know, and it's hard to get used to. And for me, I still struggle with being treated as a disabled person, because in my mind, I don't think of myself as that awful, gapingly disabled. And like, I'll catch a glimpse of myself in like the reflection of a mirror at the store, and I don't look bad, but I'm like, wow, my wheelchair is really big and I look really disabled, and it's hard. It's a struggle. And, you know,
well, I posted online an interview you had with someone that had an accompanying photograph of you in a full length gown in your chair.
Great picture. I love that picture.
And exactly what I was going to say, that is, and other people have said that about you, that actually you are the...
You're trying to make a point.
Oh, yeah, and you've developed well those skills of matching the two things, of it not feeling like... I mean, I haven't really got there with my walking stick. There's not that much adaption you can do to a lump of wood.
You know, you can be more, you can be a bit more smooth in a wheelchair. You can glide. You know, this girl I know who's broke her neck, Stephanie Aiello, she's from California. She's 21. And thank God for the young, cool people in the world that break their necks. They come up with really cool sayings. Her saying is, "You walk, I glide." And I'm like, that's cool.
Yeah.
You know, you can be kind of, you know, but yeah, with a walking stick, maybe it's a little more difficult, but you can come up with something. I don't know, put on a bow tie or something. I don't know.
I know there's a...
Something.
I know there's also a quite a strong... There's two competing schools of thought within people that I've experienced with acquired disabilities generally, but especially spinal cord injury, about whether or not they want it to be fixed, whether the eventual aim is to be up on their feet again, or whether they actually are quite defensive, as I am about CP, about it being part of my identity.
It's huge. It's huge, because you're taught in rehab to learn to, you know, overcome it and not let it, like, bring you down and make a great life despite you living with it. And then you have these people that want to get better and really don't want to make really focus on getting back heavily into regular life until they get better. And you can understand that, obviously. So, you know, I think what it is people get offended. They take it personally. Like, I'll take it personally because when someone says, you know, I want to get better, and I'm like, what, you don't think you can just be happy as paralyzed? You know, it is possible. And, you know, but it's not up to me to try to make them understand that, you know, but there is two groups. And you'll run into especially a lot of older people that have had paralysis for so long. And the idea of them getting better again is they don't even think it will ever happen. And then you have the people that break their necks in the last couple of years. And I just interviewed a guy who I've never met anyone who thinks he's going to walk again as strongly as David McCauley from New York City. This guy used to be a stock trader, and I was like, I almost started really believing him, you know, and I hope it does happen. I really do. But for me personally, I've had to kind of take the excitement, like, I dearly wanting it out, because it'll just kill you every day. It started to drain me. I just kind of having these fantasies of being able to get up and, like, surprise my mom. You know, for me, the hardest thing was, like, hurting. I always felt like kind of disappointed my mom when I broke my neck. And, you know, I don't care about anyone else I might have ruined their lives. My mother was the one I didn't want to disappoint, you know. So I would have these fantasies where I'd want to, like, get better just for her. But I've had to, like, come to terms with it, you know. And I still, you know, the Geron spinal cord injury research that's going on, the really, really exciting stuff that's happening. I just read an article on that, and the guy, the young kid who's 21 that got the stem cell injection.
So let's go into that then. We've got this is a stem cell injection in order to regenerate the damaged cells.
The cells in the spinal cord. When you break your neck or your back or whatever, the spinal cord likes to all of a sudden build up as much scar tissue as possible, which it limits any growing of nerves happening. But your body probably wouldn't have done it in the first place, because the human body wasn't built to regenerate any nerves in the spinal cord if they're damaged. So the stem cells, the hope is that the stem cells will replicate the nerves and start growing them back together again in the little areas where they need to grow back. And also, too, they have to get rid of the scar tissue first and then focus on getting the nerves back. But this kid got the injection, and it was a big deal. And he's not, like, walking again. And, you know, he's getting some movement back. And, you know, so what that says to me is that, you know, there's no happy cure happening, like, tomorrow. So you really need to focus on just here and the now and being happy. And I know it's hard for someone that can't move anything to think that, but I think there's a way to kind of coexist with both, you know?
I generally don't say this on air because it strikes me as sounding a bit morbid. So I apologize to anyone that hears this, that reads it that way. But I often say the statistics on suicide of disabled people do not match the statistics of birth over that period of time. And therefore, that proves we all, as a percentage, most of us learn to cope. And that's my general attitude to these things, that actually, even in the situations where, and you're more up to date with these situations as I am, but I believe I've seen quite a lot of instances where people are almost completely paralyzed and yet they develop communication systems from, you know, blinking their eyelid attached to a computer that then allows them to communicate and things like that.
Yeah, they can control their whole house with a blink of an eye, really. Turn on their heat, close and open their shades. There's a technology now that, you know, makes, I think, a quality of life exist that we wouldn't have had before. You know, people with spinal cord injuries typically died within 2 years before the invention of antibiotics. So thank God for that. In the 30s, people started living. Before that, you wouldn't have even wanted to live if you had a spinal cord injury. You wouldn't have. It would have been awful. But now, it's great. You know, my power chair, people that, you know, can, you know, like the home control systems, the opportunities are endless and they keep getting better. Broaden horizons, my friend Mark Felling, speaking of these systems, if you are interested in them, go to his website. He sells them. He's a quadriplegic in Minnesota and has invented them. He gave me one. It's pretty cool. I can turn on CNN laying on my back. I just TV.
Not sure why you'd want to choose CNN at that particular moment in your day, but I'll I wonder, I mean, we were talking at the top of the show about the society's attitude to disability. So, I mean, politics plays a part in that. So just, so where are the politicians in America in terms of perceptions of disability?
Well, it's always changing. You have, right now, it's really not on anyone's radar, unfortunately, because there's so many other more important issues, like an economy that's about to collapse. But when they do run, we have an election season coming up next year, and they'll be talking probably briefly about disability issues. But really, right now, it's all about just trying to salvage what we have, because a lot of cuts happening. So, yeah, it's kind of there. There's really no strong movements to get any more civil rights stuff passed, because the ADA has kind of covered that. And, you know, we're really good. We're really fortunate here in the United States, because that does give people, you know, equal access, job opportunities. But really, it varies city, you know, state to state, city to city. There's a lot of cities I won't even visit in my own country because I can't even really fully enjoy them. Like, let's see, New Orleans is not the best, you know. You know, our country is so big. You know, it's hard to really sum it up in Minnesota. But Minnesota is really great. Minnesota is very liberal. We have Al Franken from Saturday Night Live.
Oh, I'd forgotten that. Yeah, of course.
And Jesse Ventura was our governor. We kind of come from a crazy state, but we do have the politicians here. And the history of my state really do care about people with disabilities, and our governor said he refuses to live in a state where we take away services with people with disabilities, because it's always been that way, and they recently had to cut a lot. Like recently in Minnesota, they took, if you are a relative taking care of someone with a disability, they will not let you get paid caregiver wages if you're a relative. But now they won't, and now the state is getting sued for that, and I think it's completely wrong. Because just because I'm my, let's say my sister wanted to be my PCA, she wouldn't be able to get paid.
I don't know.
I just don't think it's fair.
I don't think it's so fair. No, absolutely.
It's a huge change. And that law, people are shocked because that just happened.
So. Well, you're kind of encouraging people not to help.
Exactly. You're,
which is,
you know, and I can see where they're coming from. The Republicans obviously passed this law, and, you know, and they're like thinking, you know, family should help for free, and I see that. But there's situations where, you know, you have a guy that's in a coma, like this Vietnamese couple, and he got shot in a hunting accident 5 years ago, and he's been at home in a coma for all, you know, and his wife does all the care 24 hours a day, you know. She does need, to, she deserves to get paid, otherwise he'd be in a nursing home, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
It's whatever. It's very frustrating for a lot of people in my state that have had their hours cut, basically.
I mean, it's interesting... Here we're going through a big run of disability reform in inverted commas, because it's not actually it's whatever the opposite of reform is. It's going backwards. They're kind of pulling back large parts of our welfare state, and personalization of budgets has never really existed in the UK.
Okay, so
which basically means they just give us a lump of money and say, "You're disabled. Here's a lump of money. Deal with it."
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's pretty much that's pretty much as detailed as the conversations ever get. and they're not, and they're even threatening. I mean, part of it, I think, is a desire to get towards personalization, but it's coming out of the same political direction that you were just describing. It's the Conservative Party pushing it.
Yeah.
And they are more bothered about the budget deficit than they are about the human rights of the people that they're taking the money away from.
Absolutely. It's that way. It's so frustrating because people with disabilities are constantly wanting our politicians to really understand our plights and to really give them the full attention they deserve. But on the rare occasion when they have it, it's hard. I truly believe people with disabilities are we are the last minority to really, I think, the full equal treatment. Don't you think?
Yeah, I think so. It's interesting. The law here changed from being disabled focused individually to being, they changed the law so the laws became part of an overall Equalities Act.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Equalities Act, I've been told by people who know more about the detail of it, actually took some of our rights away in the process of putting us in with all the other minorities. They actually took away some of the specific protections for disabled people.
Well, that's why that you have to have disability rights lawyers, just, you know,
yeah,
as possible. And, you know, we have, like, you know, Minnesota Disability Rights Law Center, and they're always, you know, the watchdogs trying to keep up on making sure they're the ones that actually filed suit against the state for that.
Yeah, because the ADA is still in force. It's not like the U.S. has ever done what I just described.
It's enforced, and you have, but a lot of times it's not enforced. Like, you'll have buildings that are inaccessible, and you'll have state officials or city officials that'll just overlook it and will not find the building. And it'll take an actual citizen with a disability to actually go in, file suit, and to get him to finally make his establishment accessible. And that's what is happening a lot nowadays, because the officials aren't doing their jobs. Yeah. So that happens, you know. The ADA, though, nowadays is not really being enforced. I would have to say, though, if I had an area, would probably be in the employment area. For a while, there was a lot of really great help in regards to helping people with disabilities get employed and making sure there wasn't any discrimination in the workplace and making sure employers, there's an incentives or bonuses from the government for employers to hire people with disabilities and that kind of thing. And none of that's really happening anymore. And so it's really hard for people with disabilities now to get jobs. You know, you think the regular Joe can't get a job. It's even more difficult for the Joe if he's in a wheelchair to be getting a job right now. It's very, very hard.
So what's the benchmark in that law? In the UK, employers are required to make a reasonable adjustment to the disability in order to allow someone to be employable.
Right, right. And that's, you know, always, you know, and that's what they do here, too, reasonable, you know. And, you know, for me, I got a job once and they gave me a headset. And they even let me work from home a couple days a week, and they will do that, you know. But, of course, you'll have some employers that won't, you know. It's like anything. And, but, yeah, but luckily we do have the ADA kind of as the backbone and to call, kind of fall back on it. And it's a very strong law. And in more, most cases it does. People win because of having that federal law in place. So, it's expensive, and a lot of people don't understand it. A lot of people don't like it. They think it's too expensive. I've been to so many restaurants where they complain that they have to make their bathrooms accessible. The rule is if you make the front entrance accessible, the bathroom has to be accessible, which of course is several thousand dollars, and
yeah.
Small little restaurants, bistros, whatever, can't afford it. So it's really hard, and you can see their point, you know. And I've personally think, just give them a ramp. I don't need to use the bathroom in some of these places. That's fine, you know. If I could just get in and get my favorite little beef sandwich, I'd be happy. I don't need to use your bathroom. But unfortunately, the establishment can't do that. If they have to put a ramp in legally, they got to put the bath, make the bathroom accessible. And it sounds funny coming from me. I shouldn't complain. But in some areas, I think the laws needs to be more flexible.
I was talking to Attitude Is Everything, who they advocate for access to music venues, and I was saying to the guy from that organisation, the entire point is that actually it's commercially beneficial for you to want more customers, so accessibility is kind of beneficial on that level. But I can see actually it strikes me as a bit the wrong way around to force people to make places accessible. Society should just want disabled people to frequent these places.
That's the idea, right?
Yeah.
For the ADA, people yeah. weren't doing it. And you kind of have to. That's the sad thing about it. You kind of hope they do, but they just don't.
Okay, well, let's hope it improves. I have to wrap it up.
I know, we're running out of time. It's so sad.
Yeah, well...
I want to be back on your show one day. That would be...
Oh, absolutely. Anytime, Tiffany. Thank you.
Okay, great.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. For Tiffany Carlson, I am Tim Abbott. Wear your scars with pride. And remember, we all have technical difficulties and there are no free rides. This show will be podcast on tiffanysgreatbeautyability.com.